It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. Of course, if you're near the radio dial, you can always listen on 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial and you want to keep up, you can do so with the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. You can hear all the live programming here on 92.9 FM ESPN by just simply downloading the app. Go do so today. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company again this week is, of course, the MC of all fun and games here in the Memphis area. He's also the host of 901 Wrestling. His website for all of the live events is CerritoEntertainment.com. On Twitter, on X, at Cerrito. Kevin, good day, sir.
Greetings, Jeffrey, and everybody in Memphis. Great to be back here for another week, and we've got games to talk about that have happened. Games have happened.
We got games indeed. Of course, we had some Memphis references from over the weekend. We're going to get into that. A couple of the trends that perhaps we would have noticed over the weekend. We're going to do all that here on Overreaction Monday. Jason Munns is going to join us during the next segment. Some decent amount of Tiger basketball news that he has written about. The University of Memphis has hired a number two athletic director. It's a familiar face. It's a familiar name. It is Tim Duncan. He'll tell us why Tim made the decision to leave the University of New Orleans to return, of course, to Memphis. Also got some news on perhaps the framework of a new lease agreement with FedEx Forum. Want to get his thoughts on the university releasing the fact that they have turned over all pertinent information regarding Malcolm Dandridge's academic misconduct case. We'll discuss all of that, what perhaps that could mean. We'll do that when he joins us during the next segment. We'll get into the list. Tiger football has released a depth chart. Get into that. CeeDee Lamb's got a new deal, and it looks like CeeDee might have won the tug of war, if you will, between the Cowboys and the star wide receiver. Michigan has officially apparently received their notice of allegation. Weird how that happens. Week one, we'll discuss that. The League World Series was fittingly won on an error. I enjoyed that very much. We'll also discuss the NFL quarterback tier list that's over at The Athletic, as well as ESPN's top 100 list. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I think, Kevin, first, let's start with what happened over the weekend. My number one overreaction, WWE superstar Sheamus. Sheamus knows ball. He's sitting on the weekly pick segment here. Everyone else is picking Florida State. Sheamus goes with the Jackets. Sheamus knows ball.
I don't know what Sheamus knows, but yeah, he knows that. He knew that was going to happen, and my goodness, it was a big weekend for Memphis, even though obviously the Tigers have not played yet, but there's lots to talk about in that Florida State game, which You know, we're not going to go back and say who picked what, but we know Sheamus picked Georgia State. Well, look at Georgia State.
Listen,
yeah, everybody, state today, by the way.
I'm perfectly happy. You asked me about four games last week, 2-2, yeah. Baby. Like that's the perfect, like, yeah, technically we had to tip the dealer getting out, but we didn't have a 1-3 and we didn't have an 0-4. You give me 2-2 on four games that I did not feel comfortable about at all, I'll take it every time.
I mean, it's overreaction Monday. So if you're a Tiger fan, or what's the overreaction? Are you overreacting saying, oh no, Florida State's not as good as we hoped, or oh great, yes, we're going to be able to beat them? Because honestly, as we talked about last week, we need Florida State to be a top 20 team.
So let's
Memphis to be successful.
Before we talk about all right, let's think about big picture. Give me what your real time reaction is, because that's what I always pay attention to. When you're watching a game that you don't really care one way or the other, when you find yourself feeling a certain way, I always make note of that. So how did you feel when you're watching it?
I mean, I felt like the Tigers, because I'm looking at it from the Tiger perspective, right?
Right.
And it's like they're going to be able to compete. I think they're going to be able to compete. That was my initial reaction, which is fine, right? But do we want them to be? We want them to be able to compete, but because the Tigers look good and not because Florida State looks bad, obviously. But that was my initial reaction. What about you?
So my initial reaction was, I need to see Memphis first. But my gut reaction was, if Memphis plays well, they can make that a game against Florida State. I did not think I left feeling worse about Florida State than I did coming in.
Right, and that's but of course that game is played when you're traveling so far. I can make excuses for Florida State.
And on top of that, week 1/week 0, the first week, almost every single year, it has results that you're like, well, that doesn't make sense, like when the season went on. So maybe it's possible Florida State, a lot of travel, all the reasons that we lay out, maybe it's possible they just didn't have that good of a game, but they figure stuff out, they're going to be a better team. But that it is, it's
I'm
week one.
I'm tired of making excuses for it. Look, I was very high on Florida State at the end of last season, right? I thought they got screwed. They needed an opportunity. They were undefeated. Obviously, there's excuses and legit excuses for their bowl game against Georgia. And now here they go. They're starting the next season. But also, they've got some built-in excuses because you're traveling. But there's no excuses this weekend when they play Boston College, right?
Yeah.
So that we're going to know for sure. So you can definitely overreact one way or the other. I don't, yes, I guess it'd be great for the Tigers to go undefeated. So to be able to beat Florida State one way or the other, because the competition is only Liberty and Boise. So you just hope you can beat Florida State and hope the other two teams screw up somewhere else down the line. So maybe it's best for Florida State to be beatable than to be a great team that you beat.
Yeah, because I was trying to go back and think about it. Like, I know the people that were kind of bummed to see that result are the people that wanted Florida State to have the best possible resume so that it would give the Tigers potentially the best possible win. I kind of think I was trying to go back and look at it in practice, and it's a harder thing to research, but I was doing it off the top of my memory. So in 2019... the 2019 Memphis team, right? That's the team that beats a pretty pedestrian Ole Miss. I think like a 4-8 pedestrian Ole Miss team to start the season, right? Correct? Do I have the year right?
That sounds right. I'll start looking these up as you go along. But 2019 Memphis football, right?
Because I'm pretty sure that's the year that Corral.
Most of the time Memphis gets these signature wins, it is against the like Ole Miss, right?
Right.
So when they beat the good team, when Memphis beats the good team when they're not supposed to, it's often Ole Miss. Of course, there's the UCLA win that happened and propelled that amazing season. But it has not been historically very easy for the Tigers to beat the great team. So
right.
But yeah, go back to 2019. So we go back to 2019.
So it definitely was. And that ends up being the year that Matt Luke gets fired, and they bring in Kiffin. But the reason why I point that out is I actually think historically beating a P5 team, it doesn't really need to be like, oh my God, you beat the – you gave Florida State their only loss of the year. You kind of just need to beat one, and it doesn't really even matter if they're that good. Because, like, if you think back to Cincinnati making the actual playoff in the 14 playoff, the game that largely got them there was knocking off a pretty pedestrian Notre Dame team. And Like, if you think back to, you know,
what was Notre Dame like? Because that is a great example. That does seem to be like, okay, the Tigers' path. Obviously, they were able to get in with a 14 playoff, and the Tigers are trying to get in this 12 team. But that does seem like the great analogy to compare this situation
to. 2021? I think that was 2021, yes. All right, so that 2021 team, so they beat Indiana. And for those that forget, Indiana was coming off a good year. Like, Indiana, during the COVID year, like, they had Michael Penix. They beat Penn State in the empty stadium, and everyone kind of thought Indiana was good. And then Cincinnati beats them. Indiana went 2-10 that year. The Notre Dame team was a worse example. They end up only taking two losses.
Okay, but I mean, we don't know how Florida State's going to finish out.
Correct.
But you want to the fact that Georgia Tech, a team where a lot of people were high on going into the weekend, but they were able to win, right? So that does give you the hope, right? Yeah, hold on the hope. The Tigers definitely can win. Georgia Tech did it, so the Tigers can do it. Of course, it's in Tallahassee. It's a different scenario. But the belief, if you're a fan, yes, it gets you believing that it's a real, realistic possibility. How much it will hurt the resume will depend. Obviously, it's going to, no matter what, it's going to come down to, I think, what happens with Boise State, right? What does Boise State do on the field? And so whether you'd rather have a more equal opponent in Florida State than a top 10 Florida State team that you have to take down, because if you go undefeated and Boise slips up, it's going to be beneficial to you.
Yeah, and to me, it's – with the whole given of week one, week zero, whatever, it can be weird. The thing that really stood out to me is that I did not find myself very impressed with Florida State's lines of scrimmage. Like, kind of what I thought were they were going to have the advantage. And maybe it's going to turn out that Georgia Tech, who's got an offensive line head coach, an offensive line coach as their head coach, like, their offensive line is going to end up being very good. Maybe indeed that's the case. But I was really worried Memphis was going to go to Tallahassee and some of the advantages maybe that where they would have, like, okay, you've got a quarterback that's played a ton of football, a lot of familiarity with the receivers, a lot of skill position. More times than not, that advantage goes away when you just can't block. I came away thinking, if Memphis has a good day, they might be able to hang up front. And if they can hang up front, then I don't think Florida State's going to be able to blow out a ton of teams. That was the other thing that really stood out to me. Like, if you looked at it, they're not going to have this big time downfield vertical passing game. And you kind of saw, like, their best way to move the football is, like, slowly, methodically down the field. Well, it's tough to blow people out in that situation. If you can get a couple of shot plays, I wasn't overly impressed with their secondary. Like, I could envision a way where Memphis can make that a fourth quarter game. And if you get into a fourth quarter game, oftentimes it becomes a coin flip, like we saw. Where, you know, are we feeling differently? I guess that's the other question. Are we feeling differently today if when Haynes King is kind of running around doing Haynes King things, instead of the ball bouncing around for 10 minutes and a Georgia Tech offensive lineman falling on it, let's say Florida State falls on it, and they go and kick the field goal. How much differently do we feel today?
That's a great question, because I think what the ideal result from the weekend would have been the same score but flipped over, right? Florida State winning but barely. And that is not what happened. And that so here we are. But yeah, I think we would be feeling different if the score was flipped around, because it's Overreaction Monday, right? The overreaction from the weekend, Jeffrey, is, oh no, the Tiger schedule just got worse. How did it get worse? The Tiger football schedule was already awful, and now it's getting worse by the week.
Yeah, but I could also make the argument, like, I feel better about Memphis winning that game than I did coming into the weekend. Would I still pick them to win?
The schedule got worse, but Memphis' chances to make the playoffs still maybe have gotten a little better.
Or the other way that I'd look at it is Memphis' opportunity to pick up a win that everyone cares about. Because in the end, let's say the bottom falls out on Florida State and they end up going like 6-6 or 7-5. Is there anyone that's not going to care about beating Florida State week three?
Right. We've got to get through. I just hope we really need this Labor Day. It's a Labor Day game that Florida State's got to play this week.
Yes,
so we're definitely
going
to be able to. with the Tigers playing on Saturday, right?
BC. The Tigers play Saturday night at 6 against North Alabama. North Alabama also played a FCS kickoff game against SEMO on Saturday, and they got beat. I don't know, it was like 34-15 or something like that. But they kind of had like a fun and gun offense. But that's a game that if we're talking about that game in the fourth quarter, something's gone wrong for the Tigers.
Right. But they can get through. If Florida State beats Boston College, I think it's back on track in the as far as the narrative of the game. If you're looking at, oh wow, Florida State's still the legit opponent. But if for some reason they go down to Boston College, this game is going to be a totally different atmosphere come September 14th. And we're a few weeks away from it, but I've gone back and forth, Jeffrey, since this game happens, since watching this game. It's like I'm overreacting, being happy, and also being like, oh, like this is going to be hard. I think either way, the Tigers, it's going to be hard to stack a resume, an impressive resume, up against what Boise can do, right? Boise's going to be able to stack the impressive resume. No matter how great Florida State is, it's got that challenge we've got to get through to make the playoffs. So a lot of it lies within Boise State and watching those games, and I'm more interested in how great Boise is versus how great Florida State is.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, because the likelihood is both teams after week three are going to be sitting at 2-1 with a road loss to a team that was favored against them. So Memphis will be sitting there 2-1 with a loss at Florida State, and Boise will be sitting there at 2-1 with a loss to Oregon. And at that point, you're still even. And so it's kind of how does the rest of the season play out? I think you're right in that the team that you're going to be compared to the most is still going to be Boise. I just found myself thinking, after watching Florida State, I think that that's going to be a much more gettable team than if we're watching. I think we're going to watch Oregon the first 2 weeks and think like, man, if Boise wins that, like they're probably a better team anyway, so they're going to earn it. But I think it's going to be a much more difficult proposition to beat Oregon than it is going to be to beat Florida State.
And with the playoffs, take the playoffs aside, like that wasn't even happening this year, but in the 12-team format, it's just you can't discount the impact of a team like Memphis from outside the male Power Four to go and beat a team from the Power Four. That's always an impactful moment of any college football weekend. So no matter where Florida State is going in, the ability to win that game is important. So if it's a more of an equal battle, then that's great for the Tigers.
Yeah, because I was trying to look back to week one last year. So we had the big Colorado upset of TCU, but that's kind of the perfect thing of like what I'm mentioning of on week one when Colorado beat TCU that morning, it felt like a much bigger deal than it actually ended up being. We realized TCU wasn't even a bowl team. You know what I mean? But at the time, it felt much more significant. I was trying to see if we had any other big time upsets because Iowa beat the crap out of Iowa beats Utah State. Tennessee beats.
It is a different year this year because of the playoff structure and that you can lose early and get back on track. And I wonder how much of a motivation factor that's going to be for some of these teams that when you lose early, like what are you playing for, right? You got to be playing for something later on. And this season, you do get to still have a chance, right? So Florida State still has a chance to play for something. SMU did not look that great. You know, they had to come back to beat Nevada, and they barely did it. And, you know, who's Florida State's competition in conference?
Florida State's going to – it's going to really come down to – the thing that was weird about SMU was I left – feeling pretty good about SMU's defense. Like if you watch the whole game, SMU fumbles a punt snap and gives Nevada the ball at like the 8, and that was one of their touchdowns. SMU I think turned it over, I think a total, it was at least 4 turnovers, it might have been 5. SMU was also doing the thing on offense where they were like juggling quarterbacks. It was like 2 series for Stone, 2 series for Jennings. SMU's going to have to pick a quarterback and go, because you saw at the end where SMU finally like kind of got it in gear was when they fell behind so much that they had no choice but, all right, we've just got it. We're down. We got to play Stone. He's going to have to throw it. And once they did that, they took the shackles off and their offense finally looked good. I'm more willing to say SMU's was fluky than it was alarming, because I still thought their defense showed up. And to me, they're going to be good enough on offense. But I think what we saw is I will be stunned if FSU at this point ends up winning the ACC.
You're going to be stunned. I think it's possible. They're still on their revenge tour. I wonder.
We've
had unique circumstances in this game and then, of course, the
whole
end of the season.
I wonder if they found a way, like they started rebuilding the team on the fly. Like, I think if they would have gotten into the playoff last year, I think that they don't go get DJU. They probably would have accepted that this year would have been a little bit more of a rebuilding year. But I think the fact that the way that last year ended, that kind of like forced them to kind of be like go on a kill everyone tour. I just find it hard to believe that DJ Uiagalelei is like exactly what Mike Norvell wanted, especially when we consider, like, I thought DJ was going to run it more than he did on Saturday. And it turns out like DJ might be exactly what he's shown us over 5 years or however many years it's been.
So from the weekend, you're saying Montana State was most impressive? I mean, they couldn't cover the spread against New Mexico on their big outing.
I think the most impressive boys of the weekend were our boys from Delaware State.
State, because they kept a close game.
Not only that, like, it was kind of a no-doubter. It was 35-14, and Hawaii had to score 14 points in the fourth quarter, outscoring 14-0 to make it look like it was a one-score game in the fourth quarter.
That's impressive from a team coming straight from the airport.
Absolutely. Some guys might not have even had like their actual like travel bags.
Right. It was arriving on the airport shuttle to play this game. I think you're right. I think Delaware State proved something this
week.
If we
want to talk about something that applies to Memphis tangentially, Nevada was expected to be one of the worst teams in the Mountain West. Nevada looked competent. I do not want to say they look good, because, like, let me be clear. Like, their quarterback was doing the move that a coward does, which is, hey, he clearly won the job because they told him, do not ever turn the football over, and if you don't turn the football over, we will play you. And so it's, like, third down and nine, and as soon as, like, the first read's not there, he's just running and throwing it out of bounds. Like, he wasn't even trying to be competitive with it. It's like, all right, let's punt. And then they came in with the announcers, and they did the, he won the job because he went the entire preseason camp without throwing an interception. I was like, that's actually probably not good. Like, that means, like, he's just been coached to just, like, throw it away and punt. But the fact that they're going to be competent, that makes me believe the Mountain West could be a little bit more competitive. And so there's, whenever you have a league like that where travel's difficult and teams are better than you expect, like, that could be a more difficult league for Boise to win, perhaps. That would be kind of another silver lining I'd be thinking about.
All right, yeah, I can see that, because SMU did not have the travel excuse of everybody else this weekend. I mean, I wouldn't think. Should be a pretty easy flight out of Dallas. You can fly anywhere out of Dallas.
Oh, and you know they chartered.
Right, exactly.
No, that's the thing. Like,
absolutely. No. Do they have money left to do that? I guess they do. They have so much.
Oh, yeah.
I know they're buying their way everywhere. So.
Correct.
So, but I don't know if it was overall week zero. I mean, we had close games. We did have close games. Some of the games they were all much closer than we'll get this weekend, you know, as far as like, having four games and they were all
that's the other thing that I was interested about, because this was our first look at quarterback with a headset, you know, the earpiece with the coaches calling plays and the new clock rules. Did everybody remember we had a 2-minute warning this year? Like, yeah, that was right. So the other things that kind of stood out, we didn't see a ton, especially for early week football, which is usually sloppy. We didn't see quarterbacks look nearly as incompetent. And the thing that I'm watching on that is that because the coaches are basically like in their ear set, hey, you know, whatever, trips right, Z across, hit your flat pass. Like, telling them where to throw it. And so the other thing that stood out, not only did all four underdogs cover and cover by more than a touchdown. Three of the four games also went under the total. And I'm wondering if that's because we saw like fewer plays in general. Like the only game that went over the total was that nutso New Mexico Montana State game where Montana State basically scores like 21 points in nine minutes. And it goes over by like one score. So what we kind of saw was games with fewer plays, fewer god-awful quarterback mistakes. And like to me, like that's something I'm kind of watching moving forward. Is quarterback play less sloppy?
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. I've got I'm being distracted now. We got some breaking news, some very sad breaking news, apparently.
What do we have? Because I haven't seen this.
But wrestling legend, West Memphis's own. Well, I'm sorry, Marion, Arkansas's own. He would power bomb me if he heard me say that. Marion, Arkansas's own. Psycho Sid Vicious has apparently passed away, according to his son's Facebook account. 63 years old, been battling cancer. But I'll try to get some more on this. But of course, he's one of the few wrestling legends that still was living in the Memphis area that you could see around, right? From the legends from the days past, like you would still see out and about. You'd see Sid. So I'll try to check on this. I used to join me on radio a ton when his other son was on Big Brother. This is breaking news.
I don't know how you feel. Anytime when I hear of guys dying that are younger than my dad, that's when I'm like, ugh.
I mean, 63 is very young, and we got to get it confirmed because Sid is. Sid has been, as far as the notorious social media fake accounts. You're aware of this one, Jeffrey, but like there's been a fake Sid Twitter account that has acted like Sid and people thought was Sid and was getting followed by real people that Sid knew that was not Sid. So there's, got to triple check any Sid social media stuff, but apparently it's coming from his son's real page. So we'll.
All right. We'll check on that during the break. And if we have more news, we'll update that likely on the list. All right. This was another overreaction. And I was thinking about this because I've kind of gone back and forth, and I don't want this to come across as like a Memphis slight, because when I covered Ole Miss, I kind of felt the same way. Do we need to celebrate every time we hear our name said on TV?
All right. Yeah, this was the big busy moment here. The former coach, right, of Alabama State was on TV this weekend talking about Memphis State.
Yeah.
It was a pick.
Alabama University.
Mm,
yeah.
I don't know which one's the best one. Mm-hmm. But Alabama State, still a real school, right?
Yes, it is.
Montgomery, I think.
It's HBCU.
They got a great great schedule coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Saban, do we need to celebrate every time? No. With football, I don't know.
So this is kind of why I've gone both ways. On the one hand, I actually think it's significant, and here's why I think it's significant. It's a little more peek behind the curtain. Nick Saban is Jimmy Sexton, like the gold star client. The gold star client, and Ryan is obviously one of Jimmy's clients as well. He's very aware of the teams of Jimmy's clients that could be very, very good. And Memphis very much falls into that category of teams that could be good. And I guarantee you what he's doing is, hey, man, if you got a good roster in that league, like, somebody's going to keep winning and somebody's going to move up. And so I do think it's significant. But then there's like other times where I just feel like we're just like celebrating every time like they say our name. And I'm like, oh, God, do we have to do this? But I've kind of netted out here. I'm going to let people celebrate. They want to be happy about their team, be happy about your team. I think that's kind of where I net out.
I think so. But I think what was significant, this was Nick Saban saying it. It carries a different weight
when obviously Nick Saban says it.
Right. So I think to me, that's a little bit more understanding of let's celebrate this. But at the end of the day, think about it, Jeffrey. So he was picking between three schools. So he just, it's like picking straws. It's like, is he going to say Memphis, Liberty, or Boise, right?
Yeah.
Like he was going to pick one of three if he had any sense, which he does. So we had a 1-in-3 shot of Nick Saban picking Memphis anyway, right? Instead, he picked us and said the name wrong.
Well, that's the other thing, though.
Doesn't he pick Memphis to be the team from outside?
Well,
he
put Liberty on his graphic, but he was clearly high on Memphis State. But this is the other thing.
Wait, I didn't see that. I just saw what was shared around. So
if we all collectively accept, and I think this is where we are all at, don't all of us think the Memphis State gear is by far the best gear? Like, aren't we all kind of in agreement that's the stuff we get the most excited about when they wear the Memphis State stuff?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So we can't really have our cake and eat it too, right? We can't get mad if they get called Memphis State. I think that was a bigger insult in the late 90s, early 2000s than it is now. I think now there's kind of like a hipster like acceptance of it.
There's definitely a hipster acceptance, but the throwbacks are great. There is something about throwing back to, and I saw Jason Smith going back and forth with John Martin on this on Twitter, but when throwbacks are only cool if you're throwing back to something that was good, and Memphis State football was never
good.
It was
not.
So, the idea of throwing back to football in particular makes you question that throwback. I was like, that is a great point, but at the same time, it's still what people say around town. My dad, people still call it Memphis State. So it's a nickname, and there's a lot worse nicknames for that university than Memphis State. So I'm fine with them calling it. It actually got more people's attention, honestly.
I think that's probably true. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have Jason Munns on the program. We've had some news on the athletic director front. So we have a new number two AD. We've got the workings of a new lease with FedEx Forum. We'll discuss all that. It's a Tiger lease, not a new lease with the Grizzlies in FedEx Forum. But we'll discuss all that, the Malco news, when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is. Now, if it had been mine, it would have been Superchunk, a song called Throwing Things. Superchunk's a great band from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. That if I had picked one, that would have been what it was. But Santeria is tough to beat.
I've noticed, because I was calling a high school football game, and so I'm now starting to see like more high school kids. There's a lot of Sublime shirts out there, and I'm nearly certain nobody's listened to Sublime.
So I had this conversation actually, I brought this subject up with other people just over the course of the last couple of years. Like, Def Leppard t-shirts are everywhere now.
Yeah.
Aerosmith t-shirts are everywhere. Sublime t-shirts. There was somebody wearing a TLC t-shirt the other day, which, like, I'm all for all of that.
Right. But we really celebrate I'm pretty confident none of them have listened to it.
Or if they have, maybe they don't know they've listened to it, or they certainly haven't listened to a lot of it. And again, whatever it takes, Aerosmith was probably my first favorite band back when I started like getting into music. And so that's, there's that. And then the other thing that it was back when I was in Hattiesburg and covered high schools there, I think I was at Hattiesburg High, and the marching band was playing, I honestly forget exactly what the song was, but it was an Offspring song being played by the marching band at the game. And I thought to myself, I don't know what this means about life and the universe in general, that in 2000, whatever it was, probably 16, 17, that a high school marching band is playing Offspring at a high school football game. Like, I don't know. It jarred me so much that I'm still thinking about it.
While you mention that, I also want to give a quick shout out. The Bartlett High School marching band, that looked like a college band. The amount of noise that they made, like their routine, everything. I was impressed by that high school band as I've been in a very long time. Like, they were phenomenal.
Wow. So they're like appointment viewing.
They were like, sometimes you'll get the high school band that even if they're like playing in time and there's like nothing noticeably bad, but they don't have like a powerful sound. Like, these guys brought the noise.
Wow. Well, you don't see that very often. There was a band or a high school. I keep going back to Hattiesburg, but there's a very small town right next to Hattiesburg called Petal.
Oh yeah.
And they had a really, really, that was probably like the most impressive, just production wise, production value that I ever came across covering high schools down there. So I'm all for like a really, like something worth seeing and worth experiencing when it comes to high school marching bands. So it sounds like I'm gonna be needing to catch Bartlett at some point.
Yeah, they were phenomenal. All right, I want to start with, we'll get to the Malco stuff, we'll get to the Lee stuff, but I think let's start here with the decision of Tim Duncan to leave University of New Orleans and come back to Memphis. Can you set up, to the best of your understanding, can you set up a timeline of like how this all went down?
Yes. It would have been at some point after. So we know Ed Scott was informed that he was being hired. I think it was June 26th, somewhere like within a day or two of June 26th. And I would say he was introduced on June 28th, I believe, and then did not officially take office until July 29th. I think sometime between the introductory press conference and his first official day in office. Now, I know that's kind of a wide gap, that month-long period. I think it's on the earlier side of that. I don't think it took him long after he was introduced to make that call to Tim Duncan. I mean, he said that he's, you know, they go back probably 10 years or more.
They did have a prior relationship.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like they were, you know, he was at Morgan State. Ed Scott was at Morgan State. Tim, I forget where he was at that particular time when Ed was at Morgan State, but they go back a ways and, you know, it didn't sound like they were ever just like thick as thieves by any stretch of the imagination. You know, not quite that to that level, but they, you know,
had each other's cell numbers
and would occasionally make just reach out to each other and talk shop. And they formed like a good professional, healthy respect level that went both ways. And, you know, I think that's kind of how it all came about. And then you tack on the part about Tim Duncan being, I mean, you know, so here's the thing. Like Ed is coming from his whole background is pretty much Northeast. You know, he had no experience in the South or the Mid-South or the, you know, really anywhere outside the Northeast before this. And to have a situation where he was informed, I think pretty early on, that Jeff Crane would not be returning, the opportunity to have somebody who people here know, he knows people here, Tim Duncan I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And like it was a pretty savvy move on Ed's part. But you know, the other thing that he also made clear was that he, you know, tried to get Jeff Crane to stay, and they had multiple conversations and you know, he thought, not that he was, you know, he obviously he was bummed that Jeff left, but he understood it. And so, yeah, I think once he got that situation firmed up that Jeff wasn't going to be coming back, I would be willing to bet that Tim was one of, if not the first call he made.
And I don't know whether or not Tim was a finalist, or I don't even know how we go about it anymore. It always seems like they work off a list. Like they started a list and they work down. But I thought the other thing that was encouraging about this hire, on top of someone that knows the school, knows the city, whatnot, it's pretty rare that you see someone that was under consideration, somebody that wanted a job that doesn't get the job and then winds up taking, you know, the number two gig. Like I thought that was an encouraging thing.
Yes, it is. Yeah, you don't typically see that. But I just think that speaks to the, you know, and I kind of asked him about that, and he said that that should speak volumes about his, you know, how he feels about Ed Scott and Ed Scott's vision. And not only that, I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact that what makes this, again, even apart from the fact that Tim Duncan worked here, apart from the fact that he's from here, apart from the fact that he went to Memphis, he was teammates with the head basketball coach.
Yeah.
Those guys have a relationship that, you know, you just can't put a value on. And so I think, you know, you put all that together and, very clearly it made for the right situation for Tim Duncan.
Do we have a better sense of Tim's responsibilities in the athletic department?
Yeah, so he'll be in charge of the stadium project, and as well as wherever the FedEx Forum renovations project, like whenever that gets back going again and whatever direction that goes in, he will be the point person for the athletic department on that, you know, whatever they need from him, whatever the Grizzlies need from the university, Tim will provide that. He will also be the basketball sport administrator, which means that he will be, you know, sort of the liaison between the basketball program and the basketball staff and the athletic department. And so, I mean, obviously those won't be the only things that the only hats that he wears, but those will be the primary ones.
And you got to think to a certain degree, like, this is better off for like the overall state of the program, because, you know, it's no real secret, Penny and Laird didn't have much of a relationship, not much communication, whatnot. Like, to me, like, this at least gives you an increased chance of having everyone on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, yes. There's going to be a trust factor now with Tim Duncan in the seat that he is in. You have to think that it is going to make for much more of a... not that there was anything necessarily like wrong or disharmonious, or I don't even know if that's a word, but like you would anticipate there being a little bit more harmony and synergy, just kind of on both sides of the coin. I mean, you know, I go back to the thing where Tim Duncan and Penny. I mean, Tim told me that not only were they teammates at Memphis, they've known each other since they were like 14.
Yeah.
You know, like they played Idlewild AAU together. And so like they know each other. Like those guys know each other very, very well. You know, they speak the same language, they're fraternity brothers. It's just you got to think that it's going to make for a much more comfortable situation all the way around.
Yeah, like I think oftentimes whenever you mention like Laird and Penny's relationship, it gets viewed as like it was adversarial or whatnot. It's like, no, I think the way I would describe it is like there was just kind of no communication. It wasn't like a bad thing. Certainly wasn't a good thing. It was just kind of like nothing. And to me, like this kind of increases the chance that there could be more communication, everything, kind of everybody on the same page.
Yes, I mean, you know, I don't. It's not that difficult to see that Penny Hardaway and Laird Veach came from very different worlds.
Yes,
and you know, I think that was a hindrance. And I mean, I don't think that says anything one way or the other about either Penny Hardaway or Laird Veach. It just is what it is. Like, that just is what it is. So the fact that now you've got somebody like Ed Scott in the athletic director chair, who's just, he's very much a people person. He's very good at gaining people's trust and endearing himself to people, and I think that's helpful. But then to put the cherry on top by adding Tim Duncan to the recipe, well then, you know, yeah, it's certainly going to make for a much more just functional situation.
We're talking with Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Follow him on Twitter at Munsley. And then we have a bit of an update with the Tiger basketball lease with FedEx Forum. What's kind of the latest you can tell us there?
So the original lease agreement was signed in 2004, and it was a 20-year deal. It expired in April. Memphis has no desire to, the University of Memphis has no desire to not keep playing its home basketball games at FedEx Forum. It's kind of like a, like very obvious, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's kind of a,
you gotta have paperwork.
Well, you got a new regime and Ed Scott, and you've got all the sort of questions to be answered with the renovations that the Grizzlies want at FedEx Forum and what that's going to look like. And then, of course, the other piece is, you know, that document, that agreement was signed 20 years ago. And, you know, there's a lot of money at stake with how that deal was structured. You know, and it goes back to the stuff that we report every year, the turnstile numbers, the actual attendance numbers. If you get over 10,000, if Memphis averages over 10,000 over the course of an entire season, actual people through the turnstiles, then they get an $800,000 payment from the Grizzlies. If they fall under 6,000 on average, they don't get any money, and it gets, and it becomes like a whole thing. That was signed 20 years ago. So without going into really any specifics, because we asked Ed, you know, like, so what does this mean? What are going to be the big differences between the two deals? And he said, obviously, the length. I mean, that's very clear. One was 20 years, and this was 2 years. But, you know, because it's been so long ago, like, that stuff isn't going to be quite the same. And he, again, he didn't go into the specifics because the deal hasn't been finalized, but instead of having, you know, certain attendance numbers and gate numbers attached to certain financial, you know, dollar amounts, it's not going to be quite like that. You know, I don't know whether that means the threshold is going to be lower, or if it's going to be just fundamentally different, like it's not going to have anything to do with the gate.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's probably going to be that more so than the other, though, just by the way he was talking. It sounds like they're not going to have, you know, the guaranteed payments attached to average home attendance turnstile numbers, which is good because, you know, things are a lot different now than they were 20 years ago with how you measure success. And it's not necessarily at the turnstiles anymore as much as it was.
Did you get the sense that there might be, like, another part of the deal was the number of required home games? Did you get the sense that that could change in any way?
That didn't feel like, I mean, no, like that question wasn't answered. There were, you know, nothing wrong with it. He just couldn't really go into specifics because
it's a negotiation.
The whole thing hasn't been executed or signed or whatever. So, but I did not get the vibe that was going to be part of it. I still think they want, I would be surprised if the number of home games per season doesn't stay at 17.
And then the other bit of news that we got late last week, particularly from Ed Scott, we have found out that the university has handed over all, from their side, what they think is the pertinent information regarding Malcolm Dandridge's academic misconduct case? Where what did you get the vibe? Because reading what you had written, reading Ed's quotes on it, to me, I left feeling, okay, they feel pretty good that this is not going to, like, we're not going to look up in 90 days and find out, like, oh, my God, like, the program's facing some type of, you know, doomsday scenario. That was kind of the vibe that I got.
I would say that's fair. Yeah, like, it did not, there was no, like, we are worried type of anything hanging over the interview when we got to that point. It was just, you know, here's where things stand. You know, the university is the one who initiated this deal to begin with. They were made aware of something that was going on. We still don't know exactly what, but, you know, when they were made aware of whatever was going on, they took action. You know, to refresh people's memory, Malcolm Dandridge was withheld from competition until, like, indefinitely. There was 5 games left in the season. He didn't play again, so it amounted to a 5-game, suspension or whatever. But there was, and just talking to Ed about it, it was like the university was made aware of something. They took action. They did their thing, review process. They even said that that's what they were going to do when they acknowledged what was going on. They said they were going to go through like a review process, however long that took. And then they were going to, they didn't say this, but, you know, ultimately, as we learned and talking to Ed about it last week, they, you know, whatever they came up with, whatever they gathered, they turned it over to the NCAA. And that's where things stand now, is everything they found has been turned over to the NCAA. And, you know, but to answer your question, it felt very much like they've done, once the university was made aware of what was going on, they feel like they have done everything they're supposed to do. And you hope, if you're a Memphis fan, that matters, that the NCAA takes that into account, you know, whenever they decide to do something, do their part of it.
We're wrapping up here with Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can always go follow him on Twitter at Munsley. We also got reports, because it felt like everybody had all the information on Saturday, like as soon as it was necessary. But indeed, the Big 12 has re-upped its talks, and they're planning a presentation about UConn getting full membership and joining the Big 12. I believe it'd be basketball first, then by 2031, which I don't even know what the landscape looks like by then. Who knows? But becoming a full member. From a Memphis perspective, was that good news? Was that bad news? Was that indifferent in your mind? How did you view it?
I mean, I think if you're a Memphis fan, you have to take it as a wait and see. You know, are they only going to add UConn? Or
for those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.